The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.
Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. It's Matt Ireland once again, and today I'm joined by my good friend Ed Nolliffe. Ed, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, Matt. How are yourself?
Yeah, I'm not so bad. Not so bad other than me back, which is a bit painful, but, you know, these things happen to truck drivers, sadly, occasionally. But, yeah, we're getting through that. So, as the listener might hear, Ed doesn't quite have a Suffolk accent, which is actually what he started out with. Where are you at the moment, Ed?
I am in Christchurch in the South Island of New Zealand.
So, another expat out in New Zealand, along with our good friend Nick Garlick. So, how do you end up there then, Ed? Because you obviously started your life in Suffolk, and your dad, Simon's a good friend of mine, who used to have a haulage company. So let's talk about your trip to New Zealand. How did you start out?
Yes. So I've been in New Zealand now just over 8 years, just clocked up the eighth year.
Yeah.
Came over here initially just to do some truck driving as a free ticket to look around the country. Obviously, it's a beautiful country to drive around. So done the first three and a half years of truck driving.
Yep.
And then told myself I'd never get back into management, but eventually I ended up back in management, managing truck drivers and managing transport companies. So yeah, here I am 8 years later working for one of the largest transport companies in New Zealand. We've got just shy of 300 trucks now.
That's pretty good. So how do you get started in haulage? Because obviously you got started in the UK, didn't you? So where did it all begin?
Obviously started at an early age, literally from the day I was born. Both my parents had their license when my dad had his own company. So mum and dad would drive and double man a truck, and I would be bolted to the centre console of a 2-series Scania.
Back in the days when you could do that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's it. So mum would drive and dad would look after me, and then they'd swap over and dad would drive and mum would look after me while I'm bolted to the little cot in the 2-series Scania my dad had.
Yeah.
So it started from a very early age, and then all the way through school holidays, I would go and catch up with dad and spend the school holidays with dad wherever he was in the country.
Yeah.
Some bloody good trips and some good memories, especially on the straw harvest.
Yeah.
In the summer, they were the best memories. And from there, went through school, went through college, and
did you know at the time, obviously, that's what you wanted to do, presumably, just truck drive? Or not?
Oh, so it's as you well know, and most people listening will know, it's in your blood, right? Once it's in your blood, it's hard to get out.
Very true.
Both my parents always said, you know, don't get involved in transport. It's it's a mug's game. Work silly, crazy hours, and, you know, not a lot of reward, I suppose. So my life was taking a bit of a different path. I was looking to go into the police force. I'd started in the police force in your neck of the woods, Leiston, Saxmundham, out that way, and was doing that for 4 years.
Busy around Leiston.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. So did that. And then just at football training one evening, a friend of mine said, we've got a job going at work. And I was like, oh, you work for Neil Bunford Haulage, don't you? He's like, yep. He said, oh, we've got a job going there in the office. I said, oh, yeah, okay, interesting. So, yeah, the application's actually closed into this week, and that was the Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I rustled up a CV and went in there to see them and went for the interview, and I suppose the rest is history. But I think more so just my name got me the job, to be honest. So Neil knew my family quite well. Used to date my auntie back in the day, a long, long, long time ago.
Yeah.
And there was a place next to Neil's yard. It was at Jordan's.
Jordan Servicing. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So my dad used to take his trucks there when I was a kid. And funny story, I'd look through the gates of Neil Bunford Haulage in absolute awe, like a big company with all this lovely gear, and one day I'll get to work there. And sure enough, when I turned 20, I applied for the job, got the job, and got my first job in transport. And as a real greenhorn, obviously I love trucks, but I knew a bit about them, but not the technical side of things. And the guys at Bonford's, I built a real good relationship with the guys at Bonford, and I still speak to them now. The guys in the office there and some of the drivers I'm still in contact with now. But every time I go back to the UK, I catch up with my former Bonford's team, because we had a pretty formidable team. We got through some bloody work. So I still speak to Stu, AD, Chris, all those guys.
Yeah.
And catch up with them when I go home. So then I spent probably 3-4 years. I couldn't remember the exact date, sorry, but Oxford. And then sort of got approached by a recruitment agency for a job going at another transport company locally. And I was quite happy at Bonfords. I'd sort of gone through my qualifications. I'd done my CPC, International and CPC. I got through my truck licenses. I was sort of getting experience under my belt. Wasn't particularly looking to move, but sort of said so this job had come up. Would I be interested in sort of having a listen to what they had to say? So no harm, listened to what they had to say and went for the interview, and that was at Matthews International in Great Yarmouth.
Yeah.
Went for the interview and it was too good offer to turn down, really. It was a significant wage increase, and not that I wasn't being well looked after at Bonfords. I was very well looked after, but for me, it was the next step in my career. It was going from domestic transport into international transport. Yeah. So obviously moving high-security pharmaceuticals around Europe. So I took the job there, and I remember Russell Matthews sitting me down on day one in his office and said, don't let me down. You're the most expensive signing I've ever made. So
no
I had
pressure.
To pay a finder's fee. Yeah, finder's fee for me. And I hit off with Russell from day one and everyone really at Matthews. I had a really good relationship with Trevor and Russell.
Yeah.
Russell was sort of running the place day-to-day, running the cutter, and had a really, really good relationship with Russell. Russell's actually been out to see me in New Zealand.
Yeah.
He's come out to visit me out here. Still keep in contact with Russell now. Always go and see him for a dinner or something when I'm back in the UK. So really, really good friendship with Russell and someone I respect very, very highly. Taught me a lot of the stuff I know now, more side of the management side. So Bonfords, I learned the transport piece, but it was Russell that taught me the management piece, how to conduct yourself and how to do business and things like that. So yeah, that was a real good learning curve. So I spent then best part of 4 years at Matthews before coming to New Zealand. So they were my two jobs in transport in the UK.
Yeah. So did you do much driving for either of them?
So when I first started at Bonfords, I didn't have my license, and I went through a rigid license and then did Saturday morning deliveries before football. So I'd get up at 3:00 on a Saturday morning and get some experience on the mount and do the pallet deliveries for the pallet network on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
That progressed into what was our best job, I feel, at Bonfords, and most people have heard of this, the blackcurrant deliveries down to Thatcher's.
Yep.
Down in the West Country. So that was the job that everyone wanted to do. You'd get a group of drivers on that. We'd go round and round for a few weeks. And so I'd get one of the boys to load up their truck on a Friday night. And off I'd set down to Sanford, I think the place was. Is it Sanford down at the factory?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly now. Yeah.
Testing the memory a few years ago now. But Western Supermare, basically. Come off the M5 at Western Supermare there. And you try and get down there on the Friday night. Looking back here, it's a big day. So I've been in the office all day on the Friday, and then drive the truck down there on the Friday night. Still in my office clothes. You'd park on site. There were showers and stuff on site. You'd park there or park up very close. There's a lay-by nearby with a real nice snack bar. So you'd obviously gravitate around that and get into the factory the next morning, open up your curtains. The forklift driver there, he would unload you while you're going to have a shower, and went to the shop and bought yourself some cider and toodle on home Saturday afternoon. So that's why I did a lot of driving there. And then when it comes to driving for Matthews, I did a little bit of driving, again, more so just the local domestic stuff on a Saturday if required. Yeah. But that's when obviously I got into the Trans Am piece with you. So obviously one day you were looking for a double driver and your brother couldn't help you. So you dialed me in for that, and I got the bug of the Trans Am. So did a few double drives with you and with Boyo as well, Andrew. So,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then obviously I've done a stint for Trans Am after my first stint in New Zealand as well. So, I suppose a little bit of driving all over the place. But, Trans Am was probably the most amount of driving I did in the UK on a consistent basis.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just trying to think. We did somewhere to Vienna, and I can't think where it was from now, to be honest.
Yes, it was Madrid, I think. Yeah, Madrid.
Madrid to Vienna, yeah.
Yeah, we went to that stadium and it was really, really tight. You catch your landing legs as you're going down the ramp to go underground at Madrid there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the name keeps changing with all the sponsorship and whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, I know the one you mean in town. You've got a 90-degree turn out of
it.
Onto basically a metal grid that goes up at nearly a 45-degree angle. So if it's raining in Madrid, you've then got to try and get traction on this metal grid. It's an absolute nightmare of a place. It's not.
I've got some good videos and photos of you doing it, actually. That's good fun.
Yeah, it's not like any stadium or arena. They're never designed with actually getting trucks in because they don't think of that sort of thing. But you know, that's.
The trucks have grown over years as well. Like Twickenham, was it Twickenham, Matt, that you had to lower your suspension on your trailer to get the trailer under the tunnel?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few places like that. Yeah, you've got to drop your head and squeeze yourself in or out. So, yeah.
So I've never driven in Europe, and then flew out to Madrid and met you. And I remember it quite vividly. You got us out of Madrid.
Yeah.
Pulled over and said, "Right, I'm going for a snooze. Away you go." And I was like, "Bloody hell, what am I doing here?" I was like a fish out of water there for a bit. I was pretty green at that stage, especially driving in Europe. So
driving a left,
just point of a just left hooker as well. Yeah.
Left hooker manual. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A baptism of fire, I think you might call it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, single swim.
Exactly right. And I like to think I swam rather than sunk. So he said, "Point for Barcelona, ring me up. We, you know, wake up. We get to Barcelona." So that's what we did.
Yeah. Well, it obviously worked. We got there, didn't we?
Yeah. So I did a few of those of you, and I did. Also, the best one we did was Moscow back to Newbury. That was the best one.
Yes.
Because your brother didn't want to go to Russia anymore, is that right, Matt?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, he's a lightweight, he couldn't handle it.
So that was quite funny. So I got dialed into that. So I went down to the Russian embassy in London on the train one morning, got my Russian visa, and off I flew to Moscow. And that was a hell of an experience, So obviously that video is on YouTube. It's one I watch every so often when I'm bored. I'm on YouTube, I'll rewatch that.
Yeah, it's for people who haven't been there, it's just... It's a whole other world, isn't it, going there? Or it was, mm-hmm. You know, it's just so different. That's what I loved about it, or one of the things I loved about it. It was, you just don't have anything like it in Europe, anywhere. So
just not an experience I ever thought I'd get to have. So I wasn't going to turn that opportunity down. So
Definitely.
But my partner at the time thought, and my partner and my friends at the time thought I was absolutely crazy. I'd take annual leave from my office job at Matthews to go driving around Europe with you.
Yeah.
And they're like, absolutely crazy. But I just loved it. It was a paid busman's holiday, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And when you're office bound as well, it's just nice to get out now and again, isn't it?
It still doesn't change now. So I'm still office bound now. Any opportunity I get to go driving, especially around New Zealand and the beautiful scenery. So I actually worked last Christmas Day. I put my hand up to work Christmas Day. I don't have, obviously, family and children. So I put my hand up and done a cream run over to the West Coast last Christmas Day just to give one of the team members a day at home with the family. So, and I just love it. Any opportunity to go drive a truck at the weekends or go and pick up a new truck from the bodybuilders and drive it home and its first mission is I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So that must have been quite interesting at Matthews as well, because at the time they were literally going anywhere, weren't they? Whereas I think now, sadly, they're kind of wound down their international side. But at the time they were doing like Morocco... Just anywhere, weren't they?
Yep. So we obviously, it was the pharmaceutical contract for GlaxoSmithKline through Houston Logistics is what we did at the time. So my role there was exports. So there's three of us on the team. It was me looking after exports. There was Rachel in the middle looking after all the maintenance, servicing and holidays and things. And then there was Brad doing imports. So my job was to find the domestic legs to link. If a truck come into Reading, I had to load it out of Manchester. I'd try and find a link to get it up the country, whereas before Matthews... prior to me starting, it wasn't a main focus. It was run up from Reading to Manchester to pick up your next load. I was like, well, my contacts of some of the customers I had previously, like, could you load a fridge trailer, you know, just a box body up to here and palletize good for an RDC, a supermarket? Like, yep, sweet, let's load her up. So it wasn't the best plan in the world, but paid your fuel to get to the next destination, and you often had a couple of days spare. So my job then was to load them out of such places as Barnard Castle, up in the northeast. Where else do we load a lot from? Northampton is a place in the northwest. Can't remember the bloody name of it now. Yeah. Yeah, loading them in, and we'd send them everywhere. So loaded out of Northampton to go to Morocco, normally once a week. It'd be a fair journey down there. And the customs at Morocco, minimum 24 hours waiting at customs, minimum.
Yeah.
And we had a truck there for 7 days once, trying to clear customs in Morocco for seven days. So that was interesting.
And we also had Ben Mitchell on the podcast before, and he went out just after Christmas, and he ended up for Matthews waiting. That was close to 30 days he was in the end, because there was an issue with the paperwork. Yeah. That's the longest border crossing I think I've ever known of.
So all sorts of places, obviously Romania, Hungary, all those places over the Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And we did a regular run on a Friday. We loaded out of Antwerp on a Friday afternoon with pharmaceuticals going up to Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and then up to Finland sometimes as well. The Finland was the real good one. And then we'd backload out of there back down to Antwerp. So that was a week's journey for the boys. It required a certain type of trailer. So you had a twin temp trailer and a twin deck trailer. So you'd have the, obviously, twin decked and twin temp. So two different temperatures. You'd have chilled and, what was it, plus five and plus 15 from memory. You're really scratching the memory matter here. But yeah, that was a regular run, the Scandinavian run, the Morocco run, Eastern Europe run. And we'd often bring toothpaste back out of, I think it was Slovakia, toothpaste back to Reading, I think it was. Yeah, it was bloody good fun, the Matthews pieces. So a bit more laid back way of managing trucks, right? So I'd send them to Morocco and I wouldn't speak to them for the next a week to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't speak to that driver until they got back to the UK. So I'd give them the job, book their ferries, et cetera, and they managed their own hours. We sort of told them roughly what the delivery schedule would be, but keep us posted on customs and ferries and stuff. And then Brad would take over, bring them back home, back into the UK, and then they would go to start the cycle again. So really, really good fun times at Matthews. Absolutely loved it. Learned a lot.
Excellent. And so from there, you then emigrated to New Zealand.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Yep.
September 2017 it was.
Yep. So you just went out there because you've got family out there as well, haven't you?
Yep. Real, real distant family on my dad's side. We're talking really, really distant. But I'd met them before at a party in Halesworth, believe it or not, about 2 years prior to that. And they said, oh, you should come out there. And my husband's got a her husband's from Bolton originally. And he's out there as well. Been out here for years and years and years. He's got a transport company and you should come out and see us. So a couple of years later, I decided to fly to Wellington where they were on the bottom of the North Island. And just a bit of a reset really for me. So, you know, I sort of got stuck in a rut with, you know, management. It wears you down after a while. If those listening will understand if they've done it. It's quite intense. It's quite demanding. So I thought I'd sort of try something a bit different and come out here for 6 months and have a look around and done some driving and learn some new skills. So obviously, learned to back a truck and trailer, so a trailer with a dolly, like they have in Scandinavia up there, 23-metre truck and trailers. That was a good experience the first time. So when I got here, I put a couple of cones down in the yard and just practiced until I got it and comfortably do it now. I could do it with my eyes closed. I just don't think twice about it now. It just sort of comes natural. So, yeah, that was a good experience. But 6 months is what I had scheduled with a view. I'd have spoken to Trans Am. I wanted to come back and do a tour in the summer for Trans Am.
Yeah.
So I teed up with the boys and girls in the office there before I left. It was a dream of mine to do that. So I'd done the double driving with you and Andy, but I wanted to do a tour. I wanted to do be a tour driver from start to finish. So they're like, yep, let us know what date you're due back and we'll find something for you. There might have been a bit of an ulterior motive there because they were keen to get me into their office. They offered me, or I went for an interview, sorry, for their fleet compliance role, which your brother then took. Is that right, Matt?
From memory, yes, I believe.
Yeah. I think, he took that in the end after maybe a year or so later. But, they were keen to get me into their office, obviously having worked in the transport industry for a fair while. And I turned down the job to go in their office to come back to New Zealand. So come back truck driving over here. I sort of fell in love with the place and couldn't wait to get back here. So when I finished the tour in the summer of 2018 in the UK with the Rolling Stones, I spent 8 weeks on tour of the Rolling Stones all over Europe. I flew back here and the rest is history, I suppose you could say.
So did you fly back sort of straight to a job? Is it easy getting a job as a driver in New Zealand?
It's pretty easy, to be honest. Yeah. So when I first came out here, I flew into Wellington, got myself set up with my phone and my bank accounts and stuff, and then looked for jobs when I got here. So obviously financially was reasonably stable. I had a bit of money behind me from working hard, so I wasn't in a desperate rush and found a job in the South Island for an agricultural contractor, driving trucks, doing straw, silage. They make a lot of their own produce, so they do carrots, onions, grain, all that sort of stuff. So I thought that looks quite a bit of fun. And that job actually came with accommodation included, so I could see the farm from where I was living. They charged me something like, from the top of my head, it's something like $80 a week, which is £40 a week for rent. It was and they took it straight out of your wages. So in the end, they put on breakfasts and stuff for you. They brought you out dinner if you stayed late and were working late into the night, and if you're doing straw or silage, which often you would. And so I spent 2.5 seasons with those guys. So when I came back from my tour with the Stones, back to the same company, got given a brand new truck because obviously they'd recognised I looked after my truck and I was a fairly hard worker, so I got given a brand new Mercedes truck, and yeah, absolutely loved it. So I've done that for 2.5 seasons before moving into more of a line haul role. So I got thrown into a Volvo bulk truck, so a 9-axle, so a 4-axle rigid truck, as you call it in the UK, with a 5-axle trailer behind it with a dolly.
Yeah.
Running up to 58 ton, carting coal, animal feed, stock feed, you name it, all over the South Island for a start. So yeah, that was a good stepping stone for me.
Yeah. So is the South Island busier than the North Island? Is that right? One seems a lot more sort of rural than the other, but I can never remember which way around it is.
I'm on my computer here. I could probably almost tell you the stats. But South Island's a lot more mountainous, rugged scenery, whereas the North Island is more rolling green hills, like you see on the photos and the media.
Yeah.
So I've just actually punched in the stats here. So the North Island population is 4 million and the South Island population is 1.5 million. So a lot less people in the South Island.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely stunning. A very, very beautiful place. We've only got two or three big cities in the South Island. You've got Wellington, Tauranga and Auckland in the North Island. So they're all very big cities up there.
Yeah.
Whereas down here, we've just got Christchurch and Dunedin, really. They're smaller cities. So, yeah, South Island's far more picturesque. North Island, they call it the winterless north. It's a bit warmer up there.
Yeah.
Closer to the equator, I suppose, you could probably argue.
Yeah.
So you don't get as harsh winters. So down here in the South Island, it'll be minus temperatures in the winter. In the real deep south, it gets to real, real cold temperatures. But in the North Island, you could go all winter without frost.
Oh, right, okay.
So it depends what you're looking for, right? I wasn't opposed to the cold. I quite like the cold. I don't like being too hot.
Yeah.
So the South Island seemed like a pretty logical place. I did do a small stint in the North Island, working for what we called my family's business, and just sort of helping them sort of turn things around and sort of just bring some fresh ideas to the place, I suppose. And so that was quite good. Done that for a wee stint, but I didn't particularly like living in the North Island. So
okay.
And decided to come back down to the South Island.
Fair enough. Well, a bit too busy in the North, was it?
It was living in Wellington, which is the capital city.
Yeah.
It's not a capital city like, you know, London. It's a lot smaller. Auckland would be more like London on a smaller scale. Even though Wellington's the capital, it's not the biggest city in the country. Auckland is bigger. But Wellington, it was a bit of a rat race. I sort of described it. It was like living back in the UK, right? So it was pretty shit weather, shit traffic. Not great for me playing golf. Very windy all the time. I just found the work ethic of people in the industry we were in wasn't really there. It wasn't a passionate job for those in Wellington. It was just purely a pay packet.
Right.
Whereas you find people in other parts of the North Island and outside of the cities and in the South Island where it's more rural, it's a passion. It's a job you want to do. It's an industry you've always been in. So
yeah,
and that's what I'm used to. I'm used to people who love the industry and want to work in the industry. So
yeah,
these guys who just purely treat it as a pay packet to get paid and survive.
Yeah.
And didn't take care of their trucks and all that sort of stuff, and that sort of I found that quite hard, if I'm honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so you then went to the South Island.
Yeah, back to the South Island after that. Working for Hilton Haulage, where I'm working for now. So I've been with them coming up 4 years. So one of the largest transport companies in New Zealand. I would say we're just shy of 300 trucks.
Yeah.
Now with a couple of recent acquisitions we've done, 550 staff all up. So we've got storage sheds as well as trucks and everything in between. So, it's a fair-sized company.
So are they on both the North and the South Island?
Yep. So started off, head office is in the South Island, a place called Timaru, which is where I was living. That's head office. That's where I worked for the last pretty much 4 years. I've just moved to Christchurch into my new role. I'll touch on that shortly. But, started off head office in the South Island and then opened depots in Christchurch and big presence in the South Island. But now we're up to 21 locations across both islands, including the North Island. So Auckland, Tauranga, Hastings, Levin, there's plenty, Tokoroa. There's plenty of places in the North Island too. So more and more of a presence in the North Island now for us, where we're a national carrier now, not just a Canterbury carrier, which is the region down here.
Right, okay. So they're growing quite well then. What kind of fleet do they run?
Pretty diverse fleet, to be honest. So the fleet I was managing up until recently as a operations manager, I had a predominantly PACCAR fleet. So DAF and Kenworth, we had a dealership on our doorstep. And when I say on our doorstep, I literally mean at our gates.
Yeah.
So it made sense. Pretty good philosophy he has. We tend to have trucks in locations where the dealers are in.
Yeah.
We tend to work it to that. So, for example, in Timaru, there's no Volvo dealership, so we don't have any Volvos in Timaru. You know, just why make life harder for yourself if you can't service and maintain them with a dealer?
Well, yeah, it makes sense. Right? Yeah, definitely.
Yep. So our Christchurch branch, they've got a Mercedes, a Daimler dealership on their doorstep. So they've got a lot of Mercedes and Freightliners in the container division. So, it's something I never thought of before, but it makes a lot of sense, right? So if you've got a dealership there and it's close to you and, you know, they can come in a yard, pick trucks up, drop trucks off, makes a lot of sense. So my flat deck fleet were all running DAFs. My container fleet were running Kenworths. I did have four Mercedes running on Curtin Siders doing what we call the offal runs. So we moved a lot of offal in bins and byproducts in bins. So that was my fleet. So but across the business now, we've just started introducing Scania into the fleet. So I used to say Scania. I always say Scania, but now they pronounce it as Scania, and I've actually started changing my ways. It's always been Scania to me, but I've just started picking up a few of their mannerisms. You'll probably notice in my accent a bit of a twang.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, perhaps you can just change the whole of New Zealand to say it like we do and say Scania. You never know.
Well, I say to them, there's no R in it. You say Scania, but there's no R in it. They pronounce their vowels very differently, so they're completely different pronunciation of the vowels over here to how we do. So there's quite a few words I get picked up on, teased on throughout my working day on how I pronounce things.
At least you can say chairs on the deck without sounding very rude.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, I'm not going to repeat what they said.
No.
So a couple of years ago now, Scania went out on their own. So they were run through a franchise called Cable Price. And the service is pretty poor. I've got to be careful what I say, I suppose, but the service is pretty poor. And we didn't have any Scanias for that reason as well. And they went out on their own and really flooded the market probably 3 years ago now, to be fair, and took the market share of the heavy trucks quite quickly and flooded the market, like I said. And we've got into Scanias now. So we've got reefer truck and trailers. We've got bulk truck and trailers. We've got Scania crane trucks. So we've got more and more of the best breed, best manufacturer creeping into the fleet, which is very pleasing for me because I'm a Scania man through and through, as you all know, Matt. Absolutely love them. Had my own 143 back in the UK as a show truck.
Yeah,
that's my favourite type of truck to drive. So I get any opportunity to drive a Scania like I did last Christmas Day, I'll jump at the chance. So, but a lot of DAFs, a lot of Kenworths, going away from the Freightliners. Not a big fan of the Detroit,
right?
If we're honest, this is my opinion, but it's probably echoed across the business. And now I'm into a fleet role. I sort of, I wouldn't say I get a say in it, but I'm probably a bit more influencing than I was previously.
Yeah.
But Freightliners are trying to phase those out. We've got a few left in the container fleet. What else have we got? Yeah, a lot of DAFs, a lot of Mercs. We were the largest Mercedes fleet in the country for a wee while. I don't know if that's been surpassed by anyone else at this stage.
Yeah. Have you got to drive the Kenworths and the Freightliners then?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have, yep.
Well, that kind of answers my next question. I was going to say, what do you think of it? But well, you're saying, unfortunately, it doesn't sound like a very positive thing.
Yeah, so the Freightliners have got a nickname called Freight Shakers. I'm sure you've probably heard of that. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I think they're horrible. I do not like them.
Right.
Obviously, being European myself, a POM, as we get called over here, affectionately called, for me, it's Europeans all day long.
Yeah.
Kenworths, they're fun to drive for a small period, right? So Freightliners are just, in my opinion, the Detroit engine and the rattles and bangs. They're just not my cup of tea. Kenworths I can live with. Obviously, the dealership on our doorstep, we had quite a few T410s in our fleet and K200s. Yeah, that's fun. I took one over the coast on the coast run once and it was great fun for a wee while. You're driving down the window down on the Jake brakes and stuff and that's fun for a while, but then you miss your European comforts, you know? You know, your subwoofers in the Mercedes cab when you listen to the disco and all this sort of stuff, the cab on air suspension that the Kenworths don't offer, you know. So, for me, it's European all day long. I wouldn't choose American.
No, fair enough. Are they?
We have a lot of Kenworths. They look cool. Don't get me wrong. They take a great photo. We've got some really cool Kenworths in our fleet. And we done an acquisition earlier in the year, an entire fleet of Kenworths we acquired. And we've painted those up and they look absolutely mint. So they do look cool, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't choose to drive one all the time is what I'm saying.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, that's kind of the impression I've got after speaking like Nick Garlick and various other people. I personally have never driven an American truck. I'd like to have a go, but again, just to see what they're like. I've got no real passion to certainly not drive one all the time because they just look really awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, so we got some fat cab Kenworths now. The boys have got here, and they're huge. They're bigger than some hotel rooms the boys stay in. Yeah, they're huge. But yeah, I just don't think I'd want a bit more comfort and a bit more modern technology, like the Mercedes now, the Miracam Mercedes we've got with the, like you said, the subwoofers in the cab, and it's just like driving on clouds. And the Scanias with the air suspension on the front as well, they're just so comfortable, so smooth, so quiet.
Refined.
Even the V8, you wouldn't even know you were driving a V8 these days in the Scania. We've got the 660 V8s. Yeah. They just purr along, not like the old V8s, but yeah, they're great. But the Kenworths are cool. If you get your ass out here, I could take you for a drive on one.
Yeah. Well, I've been long planning to go to New Zealand at some point. I mean, God knows where I'm going to find the time. But yeah, I'll definitely. I think I'd need probably a couple of months out there, I'd say, at least.
Minimum, yeah. First time if you're into trucks and stuff and diving. I know you like your diving, so you could do all that sort of stuff over here.
No, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it does look like an amazing country. Really does.
It sure is.
So you said you're now in Christchurch.
Yep.
How have you ended up there then?
So I've just taken on a new role at Hilton's. So, what was it, the 1st of October, I started a new role as Fleet Compliance Manager. So everything from permits to COF and roadside inspections. The COF is equivalent to an MOT in the UK,
yes,
for those who aren't aware of that. And educating drivers, operational staff, refining things where I can, making things more efficient. Yeah, just doing a bit of work in the fleet space, really. So we haven't had anyone working sort of in that space with the operation probably since I've been here. So there was a need for it, making sure our standards don't slip. We're very health and safety conscious and based, and we have fatigue management cameras. We have dash cam, forward and rear facing. We have electronic logbooks, all this sort of stuff. So we sort of tend to lead the way in a lot of that safety space and technology space. So it's definitely a need for the role. And from my point of view, it's the best decision I've ever made. So I've gone from managing, looking after 40-odd trucks roughly with 50-odd staff to managing absolutely zero members of staff. And it's a dream come true. I get to play with trucks, but I don't have to manage staff. So
excellent. The best of both.
Those have managed staff. Yeah, those have managed staff will know how draining it can be from time to time. So
yeah.
So best decision I've made. I'm really, really enjoying my new role, some real freedom, and get to travel around the country, lots of different depots, which I love. I love the travelling aspect of it, and helping people where I can, and just trying to making sure we're efficient and compliant, really.
Excellent. So when you say permits, what sort of permits do you need out in New Zealand then?
Yeah, so we are the largest user of the permit system in the country as a company. So we have HPMV permits, high productivity motor vehicle permits. So for example, you take a 9-axle unit, something like what Nick drives, because I've seen Nick driving around a bit and speak to Nick. He drives a 9-axle combination. So standard weight for a 9-axle combination would be 46 ton.
Yeah.
So you could go to 46 ton on 9-axle. So the more axles you got here, the cheaper your road user charges are.
Yeah.
Road tax. But you can increase that to, for a 9-axle, you depend on axle spacings, of course, but you can go up standard, will be 58 ton.
Yeah.
So you have to apply for a permit. So first of all, if it's over 20 meters for a 9-axle combination, you have to apply for an overlength permit.
Yeah.
Overlength, it gets you a maximum of 23 meters. So that's the 20 to 23 meters, an overlength permit that lasts for a lifetime of the combination. And then you can apply for higher mass permits. So yeah, from 46, you can go anywhere from 46. You can go up to 60 on 9-axles, depending on the axle spacing. So Kenworth's, with their set forward front axle, can get a 60 ton.
Yeah.
But most European trucks are 58 tons. What Nick drives, that Scania with a B train behind it, 9-axle combination here, the maximum he can get to is 58 ton.
Right.
I don't think those guys run at 58 ton because he's not up to weight. But we run 58 ton on nearly all of our 9-axle combinations.
Right.
So permits, have to apply for permits for those, and all different combinations have to have permits in the trucks to be produced to the police if we get stopped.
Yeah. Is it a yearly permit, is it, or?
So overlength permits are don't expire. They've got a no expiry date.
Yeah.
And then most permits last for 2 years.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So I was going to say that must be a nightmare. It surely can't be per load. That'd be ridiculous. So
No. It's per unit, per truck. So you can cut anything then, and you pay your road users equivalent to your permit. So for example, I'll go on the computer system here, make sure a truck's paying a 58 ton road tax, we'll call it.
Yeah.
And then I make sure that the truck and the driver's got access to the 58 ton permit, so they can cut anything in between. Doesn't matter. Just the last for 2 years.
Yeah.
And they're on certain roads, so approved roads. That's not every single road in the country. It's on the state highways.
Yeah.
And then certain approved roads off the state highways, like around the ports and stuff, you'll get HPMV.
Yeah.
But out in the country and countryside, they might be back to standard loading or reduced weights.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. But then, like you said, the Kenworths, for their set forward front axle, they do actually have a slight advantage over the Europeans then.
Yep. Yeah, they do. Yep. So we've got some bulk trucks. They've got the Kenworth K200. So with the set forward front axle and the trailer set up, the rear axle or the tri-set at the back of the trailer set right back, we can get 60 ton out of those with the same axle configuration as a 9-axle. So, 60 ton on those. So it's a bit more of a payload. So that's got something like just over 40 ton payload.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yes. That's pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Do your trucks have sliding bogies like the Americans do then, or are all your axles just set and that's that?
So we have sliding bogie trailers. So all the dock loading containers and stuff, we have like the container boys have, you see going up and down the A12.
Yeah.
And we have sliding bogie trailers for dock loading containers. We have trombone trailers, so extendable flat decks where we can go over length.
Yeah,
lift axles aren't very popular here. They just, you know, every six by two in the UK would have a mid lift or a tag axle. We don't have a lot of those here.
No, right.
Which is crazy. It's all about tear weight here. So I think by adding a lift axle, you add a bit of tear weight. So they're not worried about tires or fuel. They're a lot cheaper here. So they're just purely concentrating on tear weight. So those Kenworths, I'll be lifting axle on the tri set of the trailer just to stop the scrub when you're empty or when you're loaded. But we're just purely concentrating on getting that tail weight as low as we can so we can get more product in. So if you take those Kenworths, if they've got an extra 2-ton payload over the course of their lifetime, so if we run it for 8 years, 1 million Ks at 2-ton per load, it pays for itself quite quickly, right?
Yeah, very true. That's quite a difference really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the poor old driver has to suffer. But I think from like speaking to Nick and various other people, it's a bit like yourself of Scania. If you try and take a guy out of a Kenworth, he won't be very happy. Is that right?
Yeah, they're absolutely iconic over here. Absolutely iconic. Everyone loves them. It's a very stereotypical New Zealand truck. And back in the day, you know, before the Europeans maybe arrived in their forces, most of the things were Kenworth. So there's some real good Kenworths on the road. This stereotypical thing about you're not a real truck driver unless you can drive a manual with the road. Obviously, everything's Road Ranger box over here. We don't have Synchromesh over here, or very few Synchromesh, should I say.
Right.
So all the DAF manuals are Road Ranger, 18-speed Road Ranger.
Right.
All the Kenworths are Road Ranger. What else would be Road Ranger? I'd have to think now. Volvo and Scania are still Synchromesh.
Yeah.
So four of a four with a Volvo and a three of a three with a Scania.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Road Rangers are quite popular. So, yeah, Kenworth would be the driver's choice, or has been the driver's choice for a lot of years here, but I think that's slowly swinging.
Yeah.
People have realised. People have come out of their Kenworths and gone into a 730 Scania, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, this thing's quite nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually hear myself think.
My back's not shot to pieces. I can hear myself think. And I don't feel 100 years old when I finish a shift at the end of the day.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm presuming all the new ones are autos as well, are they not? Especially the Europeans.
Yeah, so you can... What can you get a manual in these days? So you can still get a manual in the Kenworths.
Yeah.
Outside of that, Volvo don't offer a manual anymore, do they? Scania were offering manual. I don't think they do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because we're a bit behind here, it's probably worth noting that we haven't got just to give you some context, we haven't got the Volvo Aero here yet. We haven't got the DAF XG here yet.
Right.
Crikey. With the DAF, we tend to skip a model. And so with the XG, we'll get the XG, but the one prior to that, the XF with the, how do I describe it? With the, like my old man drives with the XF there, but the model prior to that, which we had a lot of those at Pomfords.
The 106.
Be the 105 potentially. We missed those all together. There's not one of those, in the country. So we're a bit behind with getting the new models. The XG won't be far away. I've seen no word on the Aeros yet, the Volvos, but yeah, the XGs are not far away. So I went to the Kenworth factory in Melbourne earlier in the year, got a VIP tour around the Kenworth factory, but they're also rolling out the DAF XGs there, and that was fascinating. I spent more time looking at the DAFs than I did the Kenworths, and the Kenworth guy thought I was absolutely bonkers. Like, you're here to look at Kenworths. I said, yeah, but I want to see the XGs.
Yeah.
The first time I'd seen the XGs. So I was fascinated by these DAFs rolling off the production line, the same production line as the Kenworths come off.
Yeah.
And those who listen and obviously follow trucks around the world know that the DAFs were trialling the 660 Cummins engine in the DAFs over there.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going to come to New Zealand, as far as I understand it. They might bring the 600 Packard engine to New Zealand and the XG, but they're not at this stage. I'm sure someone will correct me if I've got this wrong. They don't think the Cummins 660 is going to come here to be offered. Obviously, you can import them from Australia. There's nothing stopping you importing the truck, but I don't think they're going to offer them as an off-the-shelf option here in New Zealand.
No, that's a bit of a shame. So I didn't realise they actually manufactured DAFs in Australia as well.
Yep, so they're at a place called Bayswater in Melbourne. So myself and the CEO over there on a golf trip in Melbourne, I was real keen to go to the Kenworth factory, just being a truck nut. He's not a truck nut. He went along and he actually found it quite enjoyable. Like he probably was the first to admit he found it quite fascinating. But rolling out the production line, something like there's a certain amount of numbers of trucks they roll out the production line per day. It's tiny compared to the likes of Eindhoven with DAF. Tiny amounts of numbers. But so they're still offering Euro 2 engines in the Kenworth that go into the mines in Western Australia. So they've got some crazy combinations coming up their production line up until the new K220. So the new offering of Kenworth's the K220 replacing the K200. They're rolling out the production line with the DAF XGs and every Kenworth in between, basically. So the production line was fascinating. Like, so you go to Eindhoven or you go to Sochitali, for example, you just see like XFs after XFs or whatever coming off the production line. This is so bespoke. They literally custom make every truck to order. Right. So the production line was every type of truck and different colour and configuration you can imagine coming down the production line. It was fascinating. Wow. Highly recommend if everyone's listening is in Melbourne, go to Bayswater and have a factory tour because it'll blow your mind.
Right. Okay. That sounds really interesting.
It was really good.
Yeah. Flipping heck. So you're living in Christchurch now for the foreseeable?
Yep, got myself a flat in the CBDs, the Central Business District in Christchurch, so right in the centre.
Yeah.
Got myself a little bachelor pad in the centre here, and pretty good location for me. So obviously our corporate head office in Christchurch is 10 minutes down the road where I'm based now. So, and then from here, I'm pretty central, so I can go to the West Coast to our depot, I can go to the Upper South Island, the Lower South Island. I'm pretty much in the middle of all our South Island locations.
Yeah.
And then obviously Christchurch being what you'd call the unofficial capital of the South Island, the international airport and domestic airport, I can fly to the North Island to our depot. So pretty good location for me. And I just enjoying city life at the moment, probably enjoying it a bit too much. So the waistline, drinking and eating, coming into Christmas and out socializing with clients and customers is pretty good.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have that problem. And just speaking of flying, one of the last times you flew back to England, why was that?
I didn't realize you're gonna ask me this. So it would be 18 months ago now, would it be, Matt? So I phoned up my dad. So big Ipswich Town fan, follow the football. Dad's a season ticket holder, my nephew's a season ticket holder, and we were getting close to promotion to the Premier League. So I was actually back in the UK when we got promoted to the Championship out of League One. I was actually there on holiday, timed it specifically for that, so that was good. Yeah. And then 12 months later, the unthinkable happened. We were in line to get promoted to the Premier League, something we never dreamt would happen. I actually missed it in 2000. My parents went and left me home with my nan at home, so I was pretty bitter about that. So they were there enjoying us getting promoted to the Premier League. So we hadn't been promoted for 22, 23 years or whatever the figure was.
Yeah.
So I rang up my dad. It was after the Coventry game on a Tuesday night, so Wednesday morning here in New Zealand. I rang my dad and I said, look, I wasn't going to come home this year. I'll come home for your 60th next year. Unless you tell me you want me to come home this weekend to watch us get promoted, if we can find a ticket. So dad said, oh, bugger my birthday. I'm not worried about that. Get your ass back here for the football. It'll be once in a lifetime. So that was the Wednesday morning. I booked my flights on the Thursday and flew out of Christchurch on the Friday. Is that right? Flew on the Friday?
Probably, yeah.
No. Booked my flights on the Wednesday, sorry. Flew on the Thursday, arrived Friday night, straight to my dad's. He picked me up from the airport in his truck in typical fashion.
Yeah.
And then on the train, 6 o'clock Saturday morning, going to football. The funny thing was, I got as far as Dubai on the plane. I still didn't have a ticket. So I was really, really clutching at straws here. And one of the girls I went to school with couldn't make it. It's her brother's wedding. So I put a post out on social media saying, hey, I'm desperate for a ticket. And yeah, one of the girls went to school with us, come up trumps, and forever grateful for the opportunity to go and watch the game in her ticket, in her seat. So got back, watched us get promoted, had like a 3-day bender, was in the UK for 6 or 7 days, and then flew back again. So a 7-day trip to the UK for So from to put it in the context, my front door to my mum's front door in Halesworth would be, I clocked it to be 42 hours point to point. So that is 24 hours of actual flying time in the air, plus your transfers, plus your travel. So 2 hours to the airport here. The first flight was Christchurch to Sydney, 3 hours, Sydney to Dubai, 15 hours, and then a layover in Dubai, then a 7.5-8 hour fly from Dubai to London, and then a drive home from Stansted. I'd always try and fly into Stansted if I could, and then a 2 hour drive home to Suffolk, so, or Norfolk if I'm going to Dad's. So, yeah, people thought I was absolutely crazy. Like, oh, I said to my boss, hey, I'm off to UK tomorrow. He's like, what? I said, I've got some holiday to use. I'm off to UK. It's once in a life opportunity. He's like, yeah, get on with it. So, yeah. Off I went to the UK the next morning, and what an amazing week that was.
All for a game of football.
All for a game of football. And I know you won't understand that because you're not a football fan, but
no,
it was a hell of an experience.
Yeah, and that's the last time I actually caught up with you because we met up for a pint, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. I think I had a pint of Aspel in Halesworth, a good old Aspel, Suffolk Aspel. You can't beat it. So. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, I was home.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, it's been fascinating chatting to you. I think we're just about out of time now. So we'll wish you good luck, and we'll perhaps catch up with you maybe next year or year after and see how the new role is going.
Yeah, I'll be settling into it by then. And I don't know, no plans to come home just yet. So I had thought about coming home this Christmas, but I've decided against it. So I'll be back in the UK at some point in the next 18 months as well. So I'd say to catch up with family. So
yeah, excellent. Yep. We'll catch up then.
No, very good. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Well, thanks a lot, Ed. I'll speak to you soon.
All right, see you later.
Cheers, mate. Ta-da.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.